Good morning. Good morning. Happy Monday. Hope you're enjoying the day. I want to thank Sheriff Paul Haru for coming in, and he really is very flexible. I've had a few things I had to bump him, and then he had to make some switches with me. So, but I always enjoy the sheriff. He's very candid, and I appreciate that. It makes good radio, I think. 508-996-0500. Titan, get on the program. I've been trying, to some degree, succeeding in playing this retirement board clip because I know many of you don't have the time to watch it yourself or the technology to watch it yourself. And remember, the mayor talked about this retirement board meeting before it happened, then sent a crew up from cable access to live stream it on Facebook. And so I recognize that it's a very important matter. And so I want to bring it to you. And here we go. This is back, and you can watch the whole thing on Facebook, on the cable New Bedford Cable Access, or go to the Cable Access website, the city website, and go to Cable Access and pull up the retirement board meeting. They're all worth watching. It's an excellent board made up of people appointed by the mayor, elected by the retirees, and elected by the whole board. That's Chris Saunders, our county treasurer and a city taxpayer. So we're going to go back to that clip and play it. This is about the cost of living increase. Now, the mayor's appointee had recommended 0% increase. And then the conversation goes from there.
This year, and it's going to go up to maybe $47 million next year with the valuation we've had.
This is the city auditor.
So that's just going to keep taking away
from appointed by the mayor.
Yeah, I have a few comments. We were here probably 23 months ago.
This is Chris Saunders.
An actuarial study that we're going to do next month. We do it every 2 years. In that actuarial study, there's a 3% COLA anticipated in it. We had many scenarios. I don't know if you were here, Colin, for that. You
yes.
were? Okay. And I know Bob was here because we looked to the city for a recommendation. And I think Bob's comments at the time were in his recommendation, which this board adopted, his recommendation, which is therefore the city's recommendation. I think his term was, it's aggressive. This board, this system, is separate and distinct from the city of New Bedford, separate tax ID numbers. We have our own issues. We have a fiduciary responsibility to this system, not to the city of New Bedford. The mission of this board is to look out for the members, the retirees, the actives, the inactives, and make contributions and decisions that will better this system. Not so we balance the city checkbook, but the city knew 2 years ago what the assessments were going to be. I don't know how those fixed costs that they knew 2 years ago are somehow changing and are leading to the budget deficit in the city. If you go back to, I think Bob was before the city council in December, and spoke to the city council. He's quoted in the New Bedford Light. At the time in December, the city had a $4.8 million surplus. He then, according to the article, said the city had an additional $8 million of unanticipated revenue. It's close to $13 million. And then on February 5th, Mr. Ekstrom sends a letter to the mayor in which he certifies the city has 9.1 in free cash. The mayor then turns around and sends a communication the same day, February 5th, to the city council, spending part of most of that $9.1 million in free cash. Now, the city didn't know that what's due to this board in December and then in February, I mean, this isn't years ago, this is weeks ago. And in that communication on February 5th, the city, without notifying Eric Cohen or the retirement system, sends a contribution to this board that's not due. It's like a gift. They had so much money in February, they sent over $616,000 to this system. Didn't pick up the phone to say, we have extra cash. We have so much cash. They just sent a wire. So when it hit our account, we're like, what is this? Why do we have $616,000 in our account? Not even so much as a courtesy phone call. We're giving you an extra appropriation. How you don't know you have, and then 6 weeks later or 8 weeks later at the mayor's state of the city, now we have a $13 million deficit. And then weeks later, it's now grown to $32 million. How do you not know in December, when you know your fixed costs, how do you not know in February? How do you spend money in February, and then you're in the hole weeks later? And now the mayor's on BSM once again, saying it's pensions. It's pensions that are driving this. We adopted their schedule they wanted. And he keeps harking back to, this is the least funded board, one of the least funded in the state. And we've said this time and time again, but it doesn't fit the mayor's narrative. It's because over time, this board has been underfunded. You know, I heard a state representative on BSM recently, and he's saying that if we had put our money in PRIT, we would have been fully funded in 10 years. I don't know if he doesn't know how it works, but we're outperforming PRIT. We've had very good years, and we're outperforming PRIT. If PRIT is so good, why aren't they fully funded like everybody else? People just don't understand. They make these statements on the radio, and everybody thinks it's gospel, and it's not. They're half-truths. The mayor gave the unit C's a raise years ago. That added to unfunded pension liability. He takes zero responsibility, because it's this board that increases the pension costs. His huge increases drove up the city assessment. His salary went from between 120 and 125 to, I think, around 167.
I'm going to take a break. I'm not sure what's happening with the audio. I've been playing the clip from Facebook of the retirement meeting. It's Chris Saunders who's been talking, but I'm getting a message from one of my loyal listeners off the air that maybe it's been dead air. We're going to figure that out. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, chips, and a soda for just $6.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
As I was walking down Roadrunner Square, not a chill to the winter, but a nip in the air. From the other direction, she was calling my eye. Could be an illusion, but I might as well try, might as well try.
Welcome back to the program. There's a little Jimmy Buffett doing the Grateful Dead, of which he's one of them now. God bless his soul. Mac Auto Sales, 180 Rivet Street in the great city of New Bedford. Mac Auto Sales, a family-owned business that repairs all makes and models of automobiles. You need to get your car ready for the coming hot weather, and I'm sure you do. Call and make an appointment today at Mac Auto Sales and repair. The phone number, 508-565 800-516-6221. They're open weekdays 9 to 5 for your convenience to make an appointment. If you're driving a foreign car, that's great. Mac Auto Sales does a wonderful job with foreign-made automobiles. They do a great job with domestic American-made vehicles as well. Give them a mention about WBSM. They'll give you a nice break on the bill. They repair the entire fleet here from Fun 107 to WBSM. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and the quality used cars for sale at Mac Auto Sales. So let's put Jimmy Buffett to sleep, so to speak. We'll go back to the retirement board meeting. Remember, Chris Saunders, who's a city resident lifelong, and the county treasurer, is an elected member of the board by the other members. He's speaking about the current situation where the mayor has been talking about the retirement board on the radio. So did Chris Hendricks, actually, as well, and he references that. We're going to go back to the talk by Chris Saunders at the retirement board meeting. And again, you can see all this on the Cable Access website and on Facebook. The mayor had the Cable Access team go up and stream this meeting live on Facebook. He had talked about it the days before, and I appreciate the mayor did that, because otherwise I'd be kind of in a jam right now. Back to the recording.
The city didn't know that what's due to this board in December and then in February. I mean, this isn't years ago. This is weeks ago. And in that communication on February 5th, the city, without notifying Eric Cohen or the retirement system, sends a contribution to this board that's not due. It's like a gift. They had so much money in February, they sent over $616,000 to this system. Didn't pick up the phone to say, we have extra cash, we have so much cash. They just sent a wire. So when it hit our account, we're like, what is this? Why do we have $616,000 in our account? Not even so much as a courtesy phone call. We're giving you an extra appropriation. How you don't know you have, oh, and then 6 weeks later or 8 weeks later at the mayor's state of the city, now we have a $13 million deficit. And then weeks later, it's now grown to $32 million. How do you not know in December, when you know your fixed costs? How do you not know in February? How do you spend money in February, and then you're in the hole weeks later? And now the mayor's on BSM once again, saying it's pensions. It's pensions that are driving this. We adopted their schedule they wanted. And he keeps harking back to, this is the least funded board, one of the least funded in the state. And we've said this time and time again, but it doesn't fit the mayor's narrative. It's because over time, this board has been underfunded. You know, I heard a state representative on BSM recently, and he's saying that if we had put our money in PRIT, we would have been fully funded in 10 years. I don't know if he doesn't know how it works, but we're outperforming PRIT. We've had very good years, and we're outperforming PRIT. If PRIT is so good, why aren't they fully funded like everybody else? People just don't understand. They make these statements on the radio, and everybody thinks it's gospel, and it's not. They're half-truths. The mayor gave the unit C's a raise years ago. That added to unfunded pension liability. He takes zero responsibility, because it's this board that increases the pension costs. His huge increases drove up the city assessment. His salary went from somewhere between 120 and 125 to, I think, around 167. He knows how it works. Now his pension's going to go up. And guess what? It's going to add cost to this board. But he takes no responsibility because it's this board. I find it somewhat comical that you've got the chief financial officer, the auditor, the mayor. They know these fixed costs. It sounds like they screwed it up, but they don't want to take responsibility for it. It's this board. It's always someone else. They can never look in the mirror and say, I screwed up. And they want the retirees to take the hit for it. And it's not the retirees' fault, because the city can't balance their own checkbook. Knowing full well what the fixed costs are, knowing full well that they had surpluses, knowing full well they gave those surpluses away, now they're stuck. It's not this board's fault that the administration screwed up. And I don't think the retirees should take the hit for it.
Mr. Chairman, I want to speak on the motion. I want to speak against the motion.
This is Billy Cabral from the Firefighters Unit.
He actually stole my thunder on a bunch of things I was going to say, so it was very well said, because that's exactly what I was going to say. I think it's embarrassing that we're actually having this vote right now. We're talking about a 0% for some of our most vulnerable people. People that served this city their whole career on a promise that the city was going to take care of them on the back end. And now, on the proposed increase, a $60 a year increase, it's like a dollar a week. For a surviving spouse who could be getting 2/3 of their spouse's pension, who might not have been eligible for Social Security because they worked for the city at the time, and the weapon, the GPO, wasn't fixed at that time. This is embarrassing. I'm 100% voting no. I actually think that 3% is not even enough. But I do understand we have a fiduciary responsibility to the system. I think the 3% is fair. I'm speaking against this motion, and that's all I can say right now, but I'll have more later.
Angel? Mr. Ekstrom, I understand that you'd like to address the board.
Sure.
I'll give you 5 minutes, okay?
Sure.
All right, this is a good point to put the broadcast on hold. From the retirement board, because we're now joined by Amy Cannavale. Amy Cannavale, of course, is the chair of the Republican State Committee here in Massachusetts, and she's joining me on the VIP line. Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Good morning. Great, thanks. Great to be with you, Chris.
So what did you think of the Democrat convention that happened this weekend?
You know, it's a reminder of the consequences of one-party government. You had individuals speaking at the convention that represent the far left of the Democratic Party. And those are the ones who are in leadership, kind of leading our state, and leading with a voice that does not represent working taxpayers in the Commonwealth. And it's a reminder of why we do what we do in the Republican Party, why we're working so hard for two-party government, balanced government. It was a litany of liberalism displayed up there on the stage.
We're speaking with Amy Cannavale, the chair of the Republican Party here in Massachusetts. Really disturbing that the Democrats allowed the Nazi guy with the tattoo who's running for Senate in Maine to show up at their convention in Massachusetts to recruit volunteers and money from Massachusetts people to help elect a guy in Maine with a Nazi tattoo and all kinds of other problems. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, Chris. So, like, not only what we saw on the stage, but at the DCU Center in Worcester, behind the stage, having Graham Plattner, his campaign represented recruiting volunteers. They had space trying to recruit volunteers and money from Massachusetts. I think tells you all you need to know about the Democratic Party in Massachusetts. It's not about representing the people. It's about representing a far left ideology. And of course, you know, with all that's come out about this candidate for U.S. Senate in Maine, It's really despicable that that was allowed. Not only his Nazi tattoo that he had for years, but also comments that he's made about women, derogatory comments he's made about gay people. So it just up and down the list that the Democratic Party in Massachusetts would allow a candidate like that to be represented in our state, I think says all you need to know about that party and how they've lost touch with common sense.
I mean, look, Susan Collins is a mainstream, most bipartisan senator, one of the most bipartisan. She's like a traditional, quite frankly, liberal New England Republican. And the fact that the Democrats would rather elect a guy with a Nazi tattoo simply because he calls himself a Democrat today is simply tells you how far out of touch, how far to the left this party is now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Susan Collins, you know, she is known for kind of delivering for Maine. She certainly, you know, cannot be characterized as a conservative Republican. She is a mainstream Republican. She's, you know, known for being out there in the community in Maine and talking to voters and really being accessible. And so to see, you know, the polling really be as close as it is for this type of individual, I think, you know, it's really troubling, frankly, for the future of New England and Massachusetts. Now, Susan Collins right now is the only Republican federal official from New England kind of representing the region in Washington, D.C. You know, we hope to change that this November, not only in Massachusetts, but I know there's a competitive congressional seat in Maine. So we're hoping, you know, we'll build on that. But right now in New England, she's it. And she is providing leadership and we need more of it.
Which because Amy Carnevale, she is the chair of the Republican Party here in Massachusetts. Amy, of course, we've got a governor's, a lieutenant governor's race going on as well. The situation with Ann Brensley and hiring a guy who committed fraud against her campaign, that's what she's telling people now. Do you have any idea of what's going to end up happening with her? And is it good for the Republican Party to have this kind of scandal hanging around when we have some really vibrant candidates potentially at the top of the ticket?
Yeah, it's certainly an unfortunate situation with the campaign for Ann Brensley. It does appear, and I say appear because, you know, there will be a legal process that'll have to sort itself out, that there was some amount of fraud committed with the signatures that she had submitted for her campaign. I guess the bottom line is it does appear, and we'll know maybe as soon as today is the deadline for the Secretary of State's office for signatures to be submitted, and then they'll be certified shortly thereafter. You know, the final numbers that Anne is able to submit, it does appear that she's short, and she's acknowledged that, and the Secretary of State's office has opposed, and it's unclear whether there's even any ability for them to, you know, change the law because it is law at this point. So, you know, Anne likely will have, you know, a legal remedy to pursue against this individual. But again, you know, we do have two other candidates who have qualified or appear to have qualified for lieutenant governor, and those campaigns will continue. It is important, I would say, for us to move forward and rally behind those candidates that we do have, because time is short, and our late primary in Massachusetts favors the Democratic Party. It favors incumbents. So we do need to get behind those individuals who are on the ballot and try to work to get their name recognition out there ahead of the November elections.
Speaking of the late primary, we were able to... I don't know, short circuit is the right word, but by the state committee endorsing John Deaton to be the U.S. Mm-hmm. Senate candidate, that is already decided. What a fantastic candidate John Deaton is. What a great guy. Talk about him.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So the state party, and this was something that I personally supported, decided several months ago to get behind John Deaton with an endorsement. And it takes a two-thirds vote of that state committee. It's an 80-member body. John had the two-thirds vote for an early endorsement. And the reason this is important, in particular with a statewide federal race, is it takes a lot of money to beat an incumbent like Ed Markey. John was a proven candidate already. He kind of been around the ropes, having run against Elizabeth Warren, was well known throughout the state, and was committed to learn from his first run in office and run even harder, the next time. So, again, the reason the endorsement is important is because it allows the state party and volunteer base to get behind that candidate early on. So we're not waiting until after September to then try to get a field game, in place and a team to support that candidate. And again, in a race like U.S. Senate, where it's so expensive and so critical that you have volunteers helping you, the earlier you can get started on that effort, the better. And so you'll see a lot of John this summer, and the state party will be doing all it can to promote his campaign and promote his efforts. I know he has actually a debate coming up with Seth Moulton, who is one of the primary opponent in that Democratic primary with Ed Markey. That's coming up in now a couple of weeks, and that will be a televised debate. So we're happy that that John will be participating in that. That'll be some great recognition for John Deaton for U.S. Senate.
We're talking with Amy Cannavale, the chair of the party. Amy, if people want to get involved with the Republican Party, maybe serve on the state committee when those elections come up, or run for office, local office, how do they get in touch with you and the party?
They can reach me directly at amy@massgop.com or go to our website at massgop.com. Again, my email is amy@massgop.com. Feel free to send me a note if you're interested in getting involved. We have a very active team. You'll hear a lot from us this summer. We're getting ready to announce some big plans for a field operation, and so you'll see much more of us throughout the state.
Amy, I appreciate you always making time for me. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. That was Amy Cannavale from the Mass GOP. Again, the Democrats had their convention, and I was really shocked, to tell you the truth. I know a lot of people in the Democrat Party, people I like, people I admire, that they would allow this guy from Maine, Plattner, to come send his team down to recruit money and volunteers when he himself got a Nazi tattoo on his body. And all kinds of other crazy stuff that he's done. I think it's a bad look for the dominant party here in the state. And Susan Collins, I remember when she got her start at Joe Malone's office, state treasurer here in Massachusetts. Democrat Party doesn't need to stoop that low. And the fact that Liz Warren is campaigning, it's just really a bad look. You get a Nazi tattoo on your body, I think you limit your options, right? Including being the nominee of any of the major parties, Republican or Democrat. But imagine the Democrats saying this. And you got to read Tim Dunn's article in the Boston Herald. He covers it really well. Tim Dunn, BostonHerald.com. Okay, I'm going to take a break. Short one. We'll go back. We're going to hear from Bob Ekstrom. He was just about to sit down at the retirement meeting and talk about, maybe try to rebut some of the things that Chris Saunders said. But I'll leave it up. If he succeeds, I'll leave that up to you to decide. So stick around. When we come back, we'll hear the end of that retirement meeting from last week, the video clip. Stick around. We'll be right back.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Roll with the punches. Laid all of his hunches. Made the best of whatever came his way. What he lacked in ambition, he made up with intuition.
Well, Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy, plowing ahead, whatever may come my way. So we were able to figure out how to play this video clip that the mayor produced, or had his team produce, of the retirement board. And we've had previous statements against a 0% increase, which was what the mayor was advocating, both here on the program and through his representatives on the retirement board. And then we heard, you know, we heard from Chris Saunders. We heard from Billy Cabral from the firefighters. Heard from the police union, a representative on there, as well, Lenny Belageron, who's the chair of the board. Now we're going to hear from Bob Ekstrom, who took some umbrage with the comments of our county treasurer, Chris Saunders. Just pipe down there, Jimmy Buffett. Okay, back to the meeting of the retirement board.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. I do try to get down once a year, and it tends to be around the hour for the vote. But I really wasn't going to offer much more than Quillen did.
However, this is Bob Ekstrom.
Chris, with your comments, I feel like I got to point out a few things. I mean, first of all, I didn't come down here looking for an argument, right? And some of the things that you say behind this, behind the camera here.
Are you addressing me or the board?
Well, I'm addressing you.
Okay.
We
need to address the board.
Yeah.
So your comments need to be addressed
to
the board.
I'll address my comments to the board.
It can't be personal. You know,
sure.
I don't think he attacked you personally. I think he attacked the financial situation within the city. And unfortunately, you being the CFO and Quillen being the auditor.
This is Lenny Belageron, on the chairman, trying to keep order.
It kind of falls upon you guys. You know what I mean?
So. Sure. Well, first of all, the $616,000, that was well advertised, even though I apologize that someone should have given Eric the heads up that it was coming. We made a conscious decision back in December or so to start putting more money into the pension system. That was done in a public meeting, city council and everything. We used to pay 25% of our free cash into stabilization. The stabilization problem more or less had gotten less of a problem than the pension system sometime about a couple of years ago. One of a big component of this $13 million that has come up from fiscal 25 board member Saunders had pointed to, that was simply a move of $5.1 million from our cable operations fund into the general fund so that we can then put it into stabilization. That's $5 million out of the $13 million. There's a lot of other one-time money that made up the rest of that surplus. It is true we had a $4.8 million turnback or favorable variances in our expenditures. That's basically because of a lot of work that Quillen's office and my office put in to keeping every single department in the city on budget. 173 budget line items. But I can't stress this enough. That has never, ever been done in New Bedford before, to my knowledge. Not in the 14 years I've been associated with the city. 173 accounts, all of which could have gone over budget, none of which did. So you're going to get turnbacks for solid management like that. You're going to get turnbacks. I refuse to be criticized for having turnbacks. Every year is different in the city. Fiscal 25, this is 2 years, even though December and February make it sound like it was tomorrow, the next day. You're talking about fiscal 25. We're now talking about fiscal 27. It's two full years different. And that's a lot of extra dollars that have gone in debt service, and yes, pension and healthcare. We know about pension. I was part of this this discussion, and I thank the board for my time to be able to contribute. Yeah, it's an aggressive funding schedule, but we have to, right? We have an unfunded liability that has to be fixed by 2035. I actually came here today to talk to the board in between meetings, tell them what we're hoping to do with the funding schedule in the future. But we have to be aggressive with that. The alternative wasn't much better. If we took the most conservative, the easiest route possible for the city, we would still be in a situation. And it's not your fault, and it's not the city's fault. And we need to stop pointing fingers at each other. It's no one's fault. Okay, this system came to us courtesy of the state back in the 1990s in an unfunded status, as did the other 104 systems that they turned over to the local local governments. Some have done better than others at funding it. We, over the years, probably haven't done as well. That's why we're fourth, the most recent stats I saw. We were the fourth lowest. I mean, that's going to change. I'm hoping that this new valuation is going to get us. I've had a personal goal of trying to see it get at least over 60%. But we're working with Linda Bornable.
This is Bob Ekstrom at the retirement board last week.
To jump around here, I just feel like I had to address a few things that I didn't anticipate having to address today. What I wanted to say is that, yeah, sure, no action you take today can change the funding schedule for 27. That was locked in stone when we did the valuation in 2024. We were committed to 26 and 27 numbers. We're simply looking at alternatives for 28 and beyond, because as I mentioned to the council, we have structural deficit here. It doesn't go away when we balance this year's budget. Okay, we're looking at a $10 million deficit in 28. We're looking at an $18 million deficit in 2029. And the pension is part of that. I'm not gonna deny that, and I'm not blaming this board because of that. It's just a fact. Healthcare is a problem. Solid waste. We could have a $4.2 million increase literally about 3 weeks ago when the bids came in. These are all things we've had to deal with on the fly. So I'm simply came here today to talk about extending the funding schedule possibly. We're going to have a meeting in June. Backing up Quillen's comments, the COLA base, the COLA increase is a cost. This board has the right to decide on that vote, but Quillen was simply asked to come in and speak to what that cost would be, which is probably, I tried to reach out to her for a number. She couldn't give me one off that quickly, but it's going to be several hundred thousand dollars a year, which is in line with what we've done in the past. I understand the 3% is baked in to the valuation and it's at 24, therefore it's baked into the numbers that we're looking at paying this year. But we're just reaching out to everybody we can to say that we do have a problem here in New Bedford, and we're looking at possible solutions. We're trying to partner with people, not blame people. We're trying to partner with people to solve this problem. So I came here with an olive branch today just to say this is what we're trying to do to fix the problem. I didn't come here to have to defend myself and the city for being caught off guard. We were not caught off guard by this. Okay, this has been building for a while. As I mentioned to the council, too many one-time fixes have happened to keep us afloat for this long. But those one-time fixes are running dry. We don't have much stabilization to throw at this problem anymore. Free cash is not going to be that substantial next year because free cash generally is generated by surpluses. And even though we had a good year in 2025, $5 million of which was because of cable access, a complete fluke, okay, because this problem should have been addressed in 2018. We're addressing it now. That's that right off the bat lops off almost 40% of the surplus that we had. I can point out ARPA and free cash that made up quite a bit of the remainder of it. We don't have these sources anymore. So
I don't want to cut you off.
Thank you very much for the time, Lenny.
I appreciate you coming here. And nobody was here beating you up personally. You're the representative of the city. Quillen's a representative of the city.
This is Lenny Blazron, police union.
And we just want to, you know, get it all out there.
Sure.
Because, you know, again, I don't understand why the retirees have to suffer as a result of what happened within the budget of the city. Attorney Saunders spelled it out correctly. The system is separate and distinct from the city. We understand the city. There is some issues with the city with regards to some issues of budgeting and stuff like that. But at this point, I appreciate you coming in. Again, nothing was directed personally at you. I think it was directed basically at the city, and you happen to be the representatives of the city. Anybody else?
Yeah, I do have one quick thing. Ms. Ekstrom's actually said
Billy Cabral
that the city's reaching out an olive branch, and they're looking for partners. So my question is, are we doing that now because the blame time is over? Because all I've heard out of the corner office is it's the state house's fault because they're not giving us enough money. It's the health care, it's too expensive. It's the retirement system, it's breaking the city. Not once has he ever said, you know what,
we fell a little bit short on this in our outlook on our budget. You know what I mean? Never taken blame, blamed everybody else. Now all of a sudden, we want to make friends and we want people to work with us and we're looking to be partners. No, both public safety units in the city are working without a contract. Now we want to give a 0% raise to the retirees. What are we doing here? We got to get our priorities straight. All the budgets, all in my eyes, the city budget reflects the leadership's priorities.
We'll be right back from Chris Saunders and other members from the union who are on the retirement board. So we'll have the mayor in on Wednesday.